In the next edition of Earth on the Air, a visit to one of the thousands of neighborhood discussion groups in this country.
I feel closer to many of the people in this room, I suppose, in a conversational sense, than many people I've known all my life, really, because I've never had conversations with those people.
It's early April, soon after President Clinton's Forest Conference, which called together opposing forces in the bitter battle over the fate of old-growth trees. Neighbors in Ballard, a community in northwest Seattle, held their own timber summit. The stakes weren't as high as the president's, though. This group chatted over wine and cheese, as it had for every other week for almost a year. They probe politics, religion, lifestyles, and anything else that provokes their interest. It's part of a network of neighborhood salons, which Utney Reader magazine helped organize a couple of years ago. Utney challenged its readers to revive the endangered art of conversation and start a revolution in their living rooms. Here's a half-hour taste of one evening's conversation.
Okay, my name is Gary Moore, and I'm a journalist.
Hi, I'm Jeff McLean. I'm a librarian and carpenter.
Mika Bowman, I'm a school administrator.
Stan Jonason, I'm an optician.
Kim Davis, I'm a baker.
Guy Thomas, I teach school.
Rosemary Daskowitz, I'm a lawyer.
Kathy Malley, I'm a fundraiser.
Mark Johnson, I'm a newsletter editor.
Linda Jangard, I'm a college instructor.
Greg Sullivan, I'm a lighting designer.
Wendy Gelbart, I am a lawyer.
and you're connected by neighborhood? You're all Ballardites?
Yeah, all Ballardites.
That's what Utney does. I mean, Utney gives you, sorts you by zip code. So we have this list of people from our zip code.
Yeah. That was something that was sort of important to us at the beginning, was that we could walk or ride our bikes or somehow get to somebody's house in relatively close proximity. And these might be people we would run into at the library or the grocery store or whatever, so that we'd develop some sort of a connection with the neighborhood, too.
We're all probably all between 30 and 45. We're all white. We all are somewhat liberal, and we all have a lot of the same values.
And what did you expect to accomplish through the salons, or
better conversation?
Better conversation.
Yeah, conversation. I mean, like many suburban type communities, I mean, we found that there wasn't really much going on beyond "Hi, have a nice day, and how's your garden doing today?" And we wanted more out of it. And
you know, one thing. One person lives 12 houses away from me, which is, I think that's really special. And it is hard to get to know your neighbors in a world where, I mean, everybody works two jobs and your kids are in daycare and life is crazy and you're home 3 hours one day and 2 hours the next day. And if you're home on a Saturday, you feel like it's a big treat.
Mm-hmm. You know, I would think that there's the potential here for political activity, especially if it's something local or neighborhood-based. At least myself, I feel there's a possibility of that at some point.
And it may be that the direction is to go in is not activism, but trying to inform ourselves about other aspects of reality. In other words, what is a logger's life like? In other words, it's another world, and one can inform oneself about that world without necessarily taking some sort of activist stand toward it. After all, that's the purpose of the group, is to share information. So maybe informationally is a way somehow to go with to branch out.
So did anybody listen to the summit?
Yeah. What are they doing anyway?
Yeah. I listened to some. It was pretty interesting. I watched it on TV, and it was sort of an interesting format. It was this gigantic conference table that people sat around, and then there was an audience. And it seemed like Clinton was engaging them in some actual honest-to-God question and answer. I mean, I saw it from, or listened to it from 4 to 6, which is just sort of the very end, but it was really interesting. I mean, it seemed like he was asking some follow-up questions and asking people hard questions that their particular position, they might not have a very flip answer for.
Did anybody else see it?
Yeah, I listened to the whole thing. I turned on the, I was painting in my house and stuff and had the earphones on. And
the water just hearings.
Absolutely. Listen, it was just like that. I started getting more and more fascinated. So I listened to the introductory remarks and back scratching and all that went on. And then the three roundtables, And I was interested because I thought, just in terms of balance, that there were more people from the industry than the environmentalists there. You know, it seemed like there were, I was hoping someone would jump up and scream kind of my views that no more trees should be cut, and forestry companies were bad guys. And while there was some of that, there wasn't nearly the stridency that I had kind of anticipated. It was good.
Well, did they resolve anything?
Rosemary's saying no over there, but I think they did.
In what way?
Well, for one thing, they resolved. These two sides, polar opposites, sat down and talked to one another. So I thought that was one big step forward. And another big step was the surprising introduction of the salmon to the whole debate. I thought that was the greatest thing, you know. All of a sudden, they seem willing to talk about watersheds as a area to be protected rather than, you know, one old beautiful tree. And I thought that was great. And, you know, here's Reich saying, so how many jobs are pertain to the fishing industry in this area? 65,000. Did you say 65,000 jobs? So that was good.
They've tried to couch this in terms of people and communities versus the owl or versus, you know, right. whatever. Right. And now all of a sudden you see that here's another community of people who are also threatened by the destruction of the ecosystem.
And they're not just tree huggers.
Yeah, they're not just tree huggers.
They're fish huggers.
Yeah, but, I mean, I guess I'm sort of in sympathy with the fellow who says cut no more. But on the other hand, these are people who are living in dire poverty, and we can all sort of nod and smile and say they'll be retrained. To do what? And I don't want to retrain those people to be McDonald's employees. I don't want to make minimum wage jobs. And I'm not sure that harvesting mushrooms in an old growth is really where it's at.
Well, I mean, the reality is we're talking about the end of an era here. I mean, this is probably something that is unparalleled since the passage of whale oil. Well, or even bigger than that, really, when you consider that whale oil at a certain point ceased to be a demand product. And I don't know how many thousands of people lost their jobs and communities went under and a major change came about. And there were no retraining programs. There was no whale oil summit during that period of time. And certainly, having recently lost my job, having been downsized by a major American corporation.
What company was that, Greg?
Well, I can't say. They're a major...
M-I-C.
Well, I can't exactly
A-Y.
Say.
But Greg, we're rooting for you.
I mean, I know that I'm in a similar situation in the sense that I'm being forced to retrain myself. I mean, I'm being forced to find other markets for my work, for my skills, or change my skills, change what I do. I also believe that we could, as a people, as a country, find ways to use the skills that these very, very experienced and well-meaning and highly qualified individuals have back in the timber industry. And perhaps it is what is advocated by this Zero Cut article, which is completely restoring those forests, not just growing trees, but restoring the roads. Anyone who's flown over this area the network of roads scares me even more than the actual cuts.
They don't talk enough about the sacredness of the particular forest that we're talking about here. Stan and I were in New Zealand a few years ago, and they destroyed all the rainforests of New Zealand early on. And now you cannot, there are just a few kauri trees, and the kauri trees they made masts out of. And there are just a few left. I mean, people go to this single cowrie tree and they stand and they look at it and that's it. It's now against the law to even be caught with cowrie wood unless it's rehabilitated cowrie wood. But it's not just the Northwest, it's all over the world, and it's the same problem all over the world. These communities are dying because they're based on an industry that is no just like the whale oil industry
or steelworks.
Yeah, and part of my concern is with the greed of, I don't know who to say, maybe it's just human nature's greed. This notion, and it's not everybody, but some corporations, some nations seem to be going in and going for the good wood. There's plenty of wood around. And I think we just have to get tough. And I'm afraid Clinton isn't going to get tough and say, you cannot cut certain kinds of wood. That's it. I when I went into this forest summit, I wasn't that adamantly for no more cut. But when it hit me, you know, 90% is gone. I mean, that it's simple math.
Well, what would if these forests, if the old growth forests are never cut again, would that affect the supply of wood where the price would continue to go up?
Sure.
How would it affect it? Any idea?
Well, the price of wood for a house has doubled, I think, in the past 6 months. But the price of wood for a house is, what, 15% of the house? So say it's gone up from, you know, $10,000 to $15,000 or $20,000. Yes, you have to feel sympathetic for the people who that extra $10,000 has put them out of the housing market because of that additional increase in the price of new housing. But relative to the cost of the house, it's not that much.
And relative to the cost of the actual cost of what it really cost to pull those trees out of the forest. I mean, it's the same discussion we get into on gasoline prices. We're not really paying what it costs.
Not in this country.
No, and eventually we will, whether we do now or we do later, we will pay. And I think we all agree the same situation exists with timber. Anytime the Forest Service continues to essentially subsidize at well below market value of a tree and of the land that is taken for this. Really, when you think about the true cost of the wood, it probably should be higher. And perhaps mahogany isn't, as much as I love mahogany and the hard woods, the beautiful hard woods, we don't need to build houses out of raw wood anymore. It can be forest products, composite products, and that sort of thing.
I had an interesting conversation with a woman who came into our office the day before the summit, and she wanted us to fax like a 10-page position paper that she had written on products, on wood products. Mm-hmm. She's 62 years old. She's unemployed. She's been in the wood products business her entire life. She grew up in Astoria. Her father helped build the Lake Quinault Lodge in the 30s.
Wow.
Her grandfather was a logger in Hokium. So she grew up in timber and fish-dependent communities. And she had written a paper that was really interesting, and her point of view was that the subsidies that the Forest Service provides timber companies basically is cutting into the ability to produce wood products that do not rely on timber, ancient forest timber or dug firs, etc. She was speaking about like medium density fiber board or wood that ceramic wood, which I guess is a process, some sort of heat process that they apply to inexpensive, quick growing woods like aspen and other kinds of woods, which makes it stronger and more durable.
Hmm.
And she felt that because the industry was so reliant, they could get wood so cheap from the Forest Service that there was no incentive for them to develop wood products. And therefore, until there was that incentive, there would continue to be the pressure on our forest. And so her point of view was that cutting should be limited, should be stopped in ancient forest and should be limited in federal forest and state forest on second growth, and that money should be put into sort of venture capitalists, people who are interested in doing wood products. I personally believe that any private timber company should be able to do what they want to do with their farm. They should harvest the trees when they want to be able to do it with, you know, when they want to. I have a problem with federal and state lands.
Exactly.
Those are my tax dollars, and my preference is that the woods be woods.
Should they be allowed to ship their logs overseas?
No.
Without?
Well,
that's what I wanted to talk about. That's so interesting. Good, good. No, I thought that was the coolest thing. I didn't know anything about this. One out of four logs gets exported whole overseas, and I thought, this is a crime. And
And because why don't they sell the wood here? And I didn't understand that it's private. Those are private logs. Mm-hmm. Those are like out of somebody's, you know,
garden.
Their lot. Backyard. And it's their logs, and they can do whatever they want with it. And if they can't get a competitive price here, well, that's why, you know, while at the beginning of the conference they were talking about, well, look at all this lumber that we could put into the local mills. They can't actually do that.
Well, they could. I mean, that's what that's what export controls are all about. I mean, we use export controls in lots of things.
Right.
Because we've never been in a position like this before where our natural resources are being taken out as natural resources, and that really puts you in a lesser developed, third world status. And so this is new for us.
Yeah.
Well, what are we going to do?
Well, I thought it was good that you know, at the end of the conference, old Bill is saying, okay, we're not going to have any more dissension among the ranks of the government. You have seen, yeah, I know. Well, you know, he said, though, that was great. You guys have 60, I've talked to my cabinet about this, they have 60 days to come up with a plan.
What do you think about that?
I don't know, but I'm waiting. You know, what is this 60 days from April 3rd, was it?
Well, what are the alternatives now? I mean, what could Clinton do or cause to have done?
Well, he could funnel a lot of money into the communities and into the development of... But we don't have any money. That's the problem. I mean,
that's the government.
I mean, we've already extended unemployment benefits how many times? I mean... Maybe it's not wise to preserve those communities. Maybe they have to wake up to the fact that there has to be a change.
Well, some of the people say, I shouldn't be under any obligation to change my life. And that's scary.
Nobody in this world is guaranteed a job or a career for life. And that's the thing. That's one of the problems that I have with the loggers.
Loggers should run for Congress.
If a logger was here, what would he say that we're missing?
James
the point.
why should his family, why should his house go bankrupt? Why should his kids not be able to go to college? Why should he have to no longer have the kind of a lifestyle he is entitled to? Why should he have to move into the middle of a city?
Because why is he any
change?
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah. Things
why
change.
Is he any different than anybody else?
But you can say that, but to live it is very different than for us
sure
to say it.
I didn't say things change easily. I said things change. And that's a part of life, and it's especially a part of life in the end of the 20th century.
We are not always going to need wood the way we have used wood in the past.
Right.
And that's, I mean, wood as we have known it and our use of as we have known it is ceasing to exist. And everyone knows that. We went to Forks, and we were backpacking near there. We brought our little string bag and went to bravely into the supermarket where not only did they not only is there no plastic bag available, but the paper bag on the side of the paper bag printed in very large block letters is the statement: "This paper bag provides jobs for the people in this community," and essentially that was the idea. And I mean, those people even know that. I mean, they know that this is changing, and they know what I'm hoping we can achieve is something that we didn't achieve 100, 150 years ago when entire communities went under and a whole fabric of our society at that time was lost forever. It is, and so that now we go to whale museums as opposed to learning more about the overall culture of that society. That maybe we find ways to support these people in a sense that so that as our society changes, we don't just leave them behind. We don't just drop them by the wayside.
Point is not that we're trying to preserve the communities, it's that we're trying to preserve the people that are in the communities. And the communities are not going to remain the same. I mean, that much is obvious even to the people that live there. But that the people themselves have to be preserved. They have to be given something to do with their lives. And it's not that we're going to hand them something on a silver platter, but it's our duty as community members and as members of the United States and as, you know, as people to try to help these people and to do something with them. If all of a sudden we're getting up on our stands and we're saying they can't cut this anymore, then we should try to help them find something else to do.
Maybe it's not available, but there should be other kinds of training that you can get for something other than flipping burgers.
Well, Wendy, what if somebody said to you right now, you can't be a lawyer tomorrow?
Right.
Don't you think you'd go through crisis?
Of course I would.
And maybe it could take a couple of years to get out of. Well, you're. I mean, maybe
yeah,
it could take.
She could go through that and do that and still live in Seattle and find her way in Seattle. Whereas if you live in Forks or Hoquiam Aberdeen,
and you might have to move.
Your options are real limited, yeah.
And you might have to move, and you might have to go learn to operate a computer.
One big issue that's been coming up is that the money they're making now per hour can probably not be matched in something they're retrained to do. You know, so the women in the families are probably going to have to go back to work, because that is the thing, is that families are very hard to support these days with just one person working. So we're talking about retraining or reorienting that many more people into finding jobs.
You know, my dad, when I was growing up as a young kid, my dad worked for his brother as a manager of a liquor store, and mostly it was, and my uncle sold the liquor store, and my father was out of work, and my father, you know, had particularly no skills to speak of. I mean, he had driven trucks and stuff, but he got interested in something, which was furniture repair, and learned how to do it. And after maybe a year of unemployment and 3 years of minimum wage jobs in the 70s when everybody else was out of work, he had a sort of a craft. And he now, I mean, he charges outrageous amounts to law firms to refinish their tables and other things. And it's real interesting to me to see that, I mean, now he has, and it didn't, I mean, it took 6 years, but that's not that long, and sometimes I feel like some of these people have been whining for 6 years. And I know, and that's not a very charitable thing to think, but if they floundered for a couple of years and then found, I mean, there are things out there that are unusual, but are skills that, I mean, my father...
Your father was exercising certain skills, not refinishing, but certain skills of flexibility when
right.
he did that.
Oh, yeah, because we, yeah.
Just in a little bit of defense of the people out there, I think they've been manipulated a little bit by politicians.
Well, you think so?
Particularly one senator that I can think of from this state, and
go on,
many other people,
name.
Has made people believe that if they hung on and they hung on with him or got on board certain political bandwagons or certain organizations, that they could... slay the environmentalist dragon and everything would be peachy and rosy and their lives could go back. And instead of people who knew better, really, telling them to face up to the realities here, because the real reality is that even if we let them cut the ancient forest, they're going to have to live this whole scenario 10 or 15 years down the road anyway. And we might as well live it now and at least keep some of the forest.
Yeah, it would seem that that one point would moot their whole argument. Because, I mean, why would people now have any more rights about losing their jobs than people 15 years from now or 20 years from now?
Someone will fix it later. You know, I want to get to my retirement, you know. Right. I got so many more years to hang on at the mill or, you know, or whatever. Or I'll do something later, but this
and after
now.
All, is
know?
It fair that I suffer?
And couple that with this is the way I've always lived my life, and then a bunch of, if you'll excuse the expression, a bunch of whiny-assed liberal environmentalist backpackers and hikers come out here and tell me that a goddamn owl is more important than my family and my friends and my kids and my retirement, and that I'm going to have to change and go, and I have to work indoors. I'm going to have to leave this job that has always been outdoors, that in this place that I love. Even though I may be clear-cutting the sides of the mountains, I see it as working outdoors in this forest that I love and feel as a caretaker for. I would have a hard time with that. I mean, the denial would be really deep.
Yeah, but there is the issue of sort of shared sacrifice. We've got to redefine this. I mean, either we don't live in wood houses anymore, or we're willing. It's just a very hard thing. But I mean, I feel like we need to not be putting, you know, wooden floors in, or we need to be thinking about it more anyway. I mean, we don't have a good answer for that.
This woman that came into the office who was talking about wood products and the need to develop those products, she was talking also about. Different countries throughout the world, and many countries don't build with wood. They don't use 2x4s. They use concrete or
stucco
or other kinds of things, and then they use wood as finishing. They have, you know, they use, you know, beautiful wood furniture, beautiful wood floors, beautiful wood trim.
So there's still that sort of heritage and providing jobs for people to mill wood, but the amount of wood that is used is significantly reduced. And even now, homes are being built with aluminum studs as opposed to wood 2x4s. I mean,
but then even, you know, even this isn't necessarily a solution because aluminum is mined just, you know, I mean, and it was the people for the West, or there's an organization of grassroots miners and timber people out in the Western states. One of their stock phrases is that everything you wear or that you live in or that you use is either mined, farmed, or logged for the most part. And it's a real difficult problem. And it has to do with management, wise management, I think, because you're right. We will never stop using wood, or we'll use aluminum, but we have to somehow manage this and stop this profit. I know there are many people who think there's nothing wrong with the profit motive, and I agree to the extent that everyone should be able to make some kind of profit, but to the extent that it becomes that over the well-being of our society, then it really does eat into that, into our well-being, I suppose.
Go for it, Jeff.
No, I was going to say, I think, you know, it's coming on towards 10 o'clock. We ought to, you know, everybody have their brief sum up what they feel.
You start.
Okay. My feeling is that the thing I'm happiest about regarding the Forest Summit, in addition to changing the name from the Timber Summit to the Forest Conference, the happiest thing I am is that the fish were brought in to the equation.
Actually, I think it's amazing that the cast of characters from Washington, D.C., who trooped out here, even if it was just to spend 6 hours or however many hours it actually turned into by the time they got there. I mean, that's just astounding. And maybe it is all hype, but it plays to me. I mean, I'm really attracted to that. And I mean, here we were in a way, I mean, getting just intelligent people to sit together and talk and be listened to by the president, the vice president, and how many cabinet? 3 or 4 members of the cabinet?
I
mean,
four.
That's four. Just astounding. I thought it was cool.
On the other hand, I am very worried about what the compromise will be. I mean, what's come up with. Clinton has really gone for the gusto on a number of things and then really backed off. You know, I just don't know. I think it was great that it happened, but...
There is the danger of him filling up his plate with too much and not keeping a focus. I know that politically he's setting everybody up for the worst scenario by saying nobody's going to like the compromise. A colleague of mine says, it's not so much what parents and children say to each other, it's the fact that they're saying something to each other, that they're making the noises, that they're in the same room making the noises to each other, and that's what's important, right? It doesn't matter what happens in therapy as long as they make noises at each other.
You've been listening to a neighborhood discussion group in Seattle, Washington. It's part of an organized network of neighborhood salons around the country, sponsored by Utney Reader Magazine's Neighborhood Salon Association. If you'd like information about joining or forming your own salon, call area code 612-338-5040. This show was produced by Peter Moloff and the Earth on the Air Radio Works. If you'd like a cassette copy, call us at area code 206-526-0551. Mention that you're interested in program number 35. Partial funding for Earth on the Air comes from the Mary Reynolds Babcock Foundation, the Town Creek Foundation, and listener members like you. Special thanks to all our volunteers and the Northwest Public Affairs Network. For the Earth on the Air Radio Works, I'm Janice Kane.